This is Live and Local. It's your connection to local music and more. Oh, and I should have mentioned, it's 31 degrees just after 12 noon. On the show today, I'll be talking with Roger Kaza, who's principal horn player of the St. Louis Symphony. He's in Charleston this afternoon and this evening for a masterclass and recital at the Eastern Illinois University. And first up will be John Curry, director of bands at Central High School in Champaign. They're giving their Swing Central event on Saturday, joining up with the jazz band there, joining up with the Edison Middle School Jazz Band, and John will be with us here in a matter of moments. Stay tuned to Live and Local. That was a bit from the ballet Cinderella by Sergei Prokofiev, the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Leonard Slatkin here on Illinois Public Media. Live and Local, I'm Kevin Kelly, and I'm with John Curry right now. He's director of bands at Champaign Central High School, and they have their program this Saturday called Swing Central. You're invited to bring your dancing shoes, it says, for a fun evening of live jazz and good food and support music education for local students. Specifically, it's Champaign Central High School. They've got a very fine band program there, very fine jazz band as well. And the Central Jazz Band and the Edison Middle School Jazz Band, which is just pretty incredible for a bunch of especially young players, will both be participating in that, as well as a guest performer, performing group. John, thanks for coming in and taking time out of your classes.
Thank you.
Has this Swing Central thing been a tradition for a while, or is it something new?
This is actually the 13th year of this. We started it my very first year at Central High School, and they wanted to capture the rage of the swing dance craze that was going on at that time. So we decided to throw that. And the very first year we had it was at the train station, the new train station downtown. And the event grew too big, so we couldn't have it there anymore. And we've moved around to a number of different places. And this year we're at the Holiday Inn in Urbana. It'll be our second year there.
One of the big ballrooms?
I think it takes up all of the ballroom areas.
Oh, where they open up all the doors,
yeah.
All
mm-hmm.
the walls, and yeah. Well, that's fantastic. That means it's been pretty successful.
It's been wonderful. We've had a lot of parents be involved, and the community gets behind it. And I would say probably out of all the things we do, all the concerts and all the gigs and everything we do, this is probably the most fun event that we do. The kids love this, and the parents love it too, so...
So is there a lot of dancing that goes on?
There's a lot of dancing. A lot of times the Swing Society folks will be out there, and they kids get dressed up in zoot suits and
oh, really?
Boas and all kinds of stuff. They really go all at it.
Where do they find the zoot suits?
They find them somewhere. I don't know. They get decked out, and they have a good time.
In the band as well, or do you have
this is the time I let them. I usually have strict things that they usually wear, but they're allowed to ham it up a little bit this time.
Yeah, I hear you're pretty strict with them.
We do all right.
But I hear very, very positive things out of the kids and their work with you. But, a combination of enjoying working with the director and also being disciplined is how you get a really strong program.
It absolutely is. They have a great start at the middle school and elementary schools, when they come over to the high school, we just continue that process and let the go-getters go get it. And we have different levels of participation, and the kids that really want to go after it, they practice hard, and the groups sound wonderful.
Well, let's launch right into a little bit of music. Does this come from a previous swing program or a different event?
This actually came from the Eastern Jazz Festival. This is, a snippet from our performance down at the Eastern Jazz Festival like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, very recent.
Yeah, so it's very recent. I looked through a bunch of CDs and I thought, you know, it'd probably be good to have something for the recent group. So I chose to bring the stuff from the Eastern Jazz Festival.
So this is the band that'll be playing on Saturday.
That is correct. Mm-hmm.
And this is called.
Jazz ensemble. We have three jazz bands and three combos at our school, and I believe Edison has three jazz bands too. So it's a big process. And there's a lot for the kids to do.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, we'll explore that just a little bit more. Here's the jazz ensemble from Champaign Central High School, directed by John Curry. They're going to be doing their Swing Central program this Saturday at the Holiday Inn in Urbana. It's live and local.
Thank you.
That's the well-deserved applause for the Champaign Central High School Jazz Ensemble, playing just a couple of weeks ago at the Eastern Jazz Festival down in Charleston. And you can go hear them along with the Edison Middle School Jazz Bands Saturday. Starting at 6:30, it's the Swing Central event at the Holiday Inn in Urbana. We've got the director of all the bands at Central High School, John Curry, with us on Live and Local right now. Is it just the jazz ensemble, or all the jazz bands going to be there on Saturday?
It's going to be all three of our jazz groups. Still, the night starts at about 6:30. We have three different jazz bands at Central that will play. Our lab band, our stage band, and the jazz ensemble. And then, as you've mentioned a number of times, the Edison Jazz Band will be playing. Each of those groups will probably play about a 45-minute set. The ensemble might play an hour. And then Bruiser and the Virtues will come on and do another hour and a half at the end. So the event will go from 6:30 to about midnight.
Oh, so that'd be nice. Nice long period of time. Yeah. And there's some food?
There's hors d'oeuvres. Yep. We've had food at this event for many years. And while it's not a sit-down dinner, it's hors d'oeuvres. And there's the ability to purchase drinks and stuff. And it's a really neat event.
And if somebody... tickets are required, I assume?
Tickets are required. Now you can still go to our website at maroons.org and purchase tickets. Tickets are $25 for adults and $15 for students. You can go online and get those at maroons.org, or you can come to the door and get them. Obviously, we'd like to get them earlier so we can know how much food to order for the event.
And tell me a little bit about Bruiser and the Virtues.
Bruiser and the Virtues is a group that's played at our event a couple of times. I believe they played the very first year we did it at the train station. And then we had them back this past year. They're a great local group. Peter Rubel is somebody that people might know.
He does the jazz groups, one of them at Parkland.
He did. I don't know if he's still doing that, but Peter and I actually go back a long ways. We played in Tom Berkner's U of I big band a number of years ago when we were both in grad school. So I've known Peter a long time, and he plays in Bruiser and the Virtues, and it's a great swing dance group.
And both you and Peter sax players.
Yeah, we're both sax players.
What are the challenges of teaching jazz to high school kids?
Well, there's lots of challenges. first and foremost, I think the kids really do enjoy it. It's more flashy. It's more individualistic. I think because everybody has to be accountable, not that you don't have to be in other groups, but in the marching band, there's tons of people. In the concert bands, there are a number of people that play the same part. But in jazz band, you are the only one that plays that part. And I think for a lot of kids, having that accountability put on them is a really neat aspect of it. It also allows them to explore how to improvise and all of that stuff. And quite frankly, I'm not the greatest improviser in the world. And so for our kids, it's neat for them to explore it. And I've had many kids that are better improvisers than I ever was. Hmm. So and that's my goal, is to get the kids better than where I was and when I was growing up. So
how do you teach improvisation? I mean, especially if you feel that you weren't all that good at it yourself?
Well, a lot of times I point them in the right direction. I'll either get them hooked up with good private teachers. I'll get them hooked up with good recordings that they'll listen to and copy from. And I do have a decent idea of how to do it, the technical theory parts. But I never spent a lot of time doing it myself. So when they get hooked up with private teachers or camps in the summer, they are really able to explore it and do some neat stuff.
So how do you make assignments in the bands? You know, say you're going to take this solo or you're going to take that solo.
Well, basically it's volunteer. I mean, anybody that wants to blow or play a solo is able to do that. And certain kids might not put their hand up right away to do it, but they'll come and talk to me outside of class and say, hey, I'd like to do this. And I'll get them hooked up with a Jamie Ebersole book or a play-along CD so that they can work on it on their own, so that they, when they come in and play it in class, they feel comfortable doing that in front of their peers.
And the Edison Middle School Jazz Band has had a pretty strong reputation for a long time, particularly back when Sam Hankins was the director and really built that up. Who's their current director, and has the tradition continued?
The tradition absolutely has continued. Sam and I were actually in the Tom Berkner's band with Peter Rubel and my wife Jennifer, Tom Wirtle, who was around for a long time. We were all in the band together. And Sam actually recruited me to come down here. We were up at the Midwest Clinic, and I was teaching in Indiana, and he said, what are you doing next year? And I said, well, I don't know, my job's not that great. So he said, why don't you come down to Champaign? And we did, and he had a fantastic thing going. The current director, Mike Lehman, student taught with both Sam and I. In fact, he was the last one to student teach with Sam Hankins before Sam left. When Sam left, I called Michael. He had already had a teaching job in Effingham, and he had bought a house down there, and I called him. I said, Mike, I said, you would absolutely be the best or right person for this job. I said, I would like for you to consider it. It was like 2 weeks before school started, and he came and interviewed, and he's a wonderful, wonderful teacher, has a great personality, and the kids adore him, and he's got an incredible thing going on over there. I think he has like 215 kids in band at Edison, and you know.
In middle school,
yeah. And so the future is great for Central High School because the middle school is so strong. Michael's a great teacher.
And Edison feeds into Central
for the most part, yes. With the school of choice, we don't get all of the kids like we used to when Sam was there. But the majority of the kids do end up coming to Central, and they're a fantastic group of kids. And every year we look forward to having them come and participate at our events and then coming over and joining our program at Central High School.
Well, here's a little bit more of the Central Jazz Ensemble, also from that event at Eastern. I'm not sure. We're probably going to be fading into the middle of the tune here somewhere because there was some talk at the beginning.
This is the second one.
So this is more of a ballad type.
The second one. This is called Rocks in My Bed, and it has a bunch of different soloists in it.
Rocks in My Bed?
Rocks in My Bed. It's a Duke Ellington, Billy Strayhorn composition.
That's a great tune.
Yeah.
Great name for a tune. I don't know the tune. Let's give a listen here on Live and Local.
Thank you.
So there's a bit of the jazz ensemble at Champaign Central High School from the Eastern Illinois Jazz Festival just a couple weeks ago in Charleston. And it's from Champaign Central and also from Edison Middle School, along with a guest performance by Bruiser and the Virtues, going to be presenting their Swing Central event, 13th annual, at the Holiday Inn in Urbana. This Saturday starts at 6:30. Music and dancing start at 6:30. There's going to be some food, hors d'oeuvres, I should say, buffet, cash bar. And for tickets and more information, you can go to maroons.org. That's the name of the team, I gather, at Champaign Central.
Yeah, that's our mascot.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And John Curry is the director of bands there. He's been with us on this portion of Live and Local. And John, parting words. What do you think people will get out of this event on Saturday? What'll Central get out of it?
They need to put on their shoes so that they'll dance. Actually, a lot of people have jazz band dinner dances, but people don't actually get up and dance. This one, they do. My personal kids, I have 7-year-old twins, absolutely love this. They look forward to it every year.
So they'll get up and dance.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The kids will, there'll be plenty of people on the dance floor. I think it's important for our kids to actually play for a dance, because that's what this music was originally for. And for them to have that perspective really allows them to play a certain way, because they have an understanding as to why it's that way. So that's the big thing for us, get to play for people that really are enjoying what we're doing.
And it's a great program, and the program, it's a great band program, and that program will benefit from this event.
Absolutely.
Monetarily.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's plenty of needs that our program needs to deal with.
Help support the music program in Champaign. Go out and hear Swing Central Saturday night. Thanks, John, very much for
Thank
coming.
You.
And here's a bit more of the jazz ensemble from a couple of weeks ago. Champaign Central High School Jazz Ensemble here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Stay tuned. We'll be talking with Roger Kaza, principal horn player of the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra. He's giving a recital and a masterclass this afternoon and evening, actually in reverse order of what I just said, at Eastern Illinois University in Charleston. Today's broadcast on FM 90.9 is made possible in part by a grant from the Meredith Foundation dedicated to supporting the musical arts in performance and presentation. And we have support from the owners of 1015 West Church Street in Champaign, a century-old four-bedroom home on a double lot offered by Sharon Harkness of Keller Williams Realty. An open house will be held this Sunday, March 6th, from 2 to 4 p.m. More information is at sharonharkness.com. My next guest on Live and Local is Roger Kaza, who is a principal horn player of the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra. He's in that position, I guess, a couple of years, and recently was most recently before that, associate principal horn of the Houston Symphony. And we're talking to him because he is going to be in Charleston today, giving a master class this afternoon, which is open to anybody who wants, and then a recital. All of that at the Dowden Fine Arts Center on the campus of Eastern Illinois University in Charleston. And he's, I think, at a gas stop on his way from St. Louis to Charleston. So thanks for joining us.
Yes, nice to be here.
Did you know Katie McBain, who is the horn professor there, or did she just get hold of you?
Yeah, we actually knew each other from Houston years ago. I believe she went to the University of Houston. And my wife, who's a pianist, who's accompanying me tonight on my recital, actually played for Katie years ago. So the music business is very small, and you're invariably running into connections like this. So I was thrilled when I heard she was in Charleston, and we emailed a little bit, and she suggested we come over.
So how long have you been at the Houston Symphony? The St. Louis Symphony?
Well, it's kind of an interesting tale. I joined initially in the early 80s, actually, on third horn as a young horn player in my 20s, and Leonard Slatkin was conducting at that time. And I stayed for 12 years, and then for various reasons decided to go down to Houston, and never thought I would ever come back. It was just that part of my life had been kind of closed, so to speak. But then the principal opening came, and I played a week, and it just felt like coming home again. So after an audition, came back, I guess, in the fall of 09. So it's been a wonderful kind of reunion.
And is David Robertson is the conductor there now, right?
That's right, yeah. I've worked with him a couple times in Houston. But, the orchestra has a tremendous spirit to it. I think there's about 40 new players since I left in the mid-90s. And it's a pretty youthful orchestra, but there's still enough of us old-timers to kind of remember the tradition and keep things going that way.
How many of the horn players are the same as you've played with before?
Actually only two. And, so we've added, I think, three or four players since then. And it's now a six-horn section. It used to be only five horns. But David Robertson, is one of the criterion he had for his orchestra when he took it over was he wanted it to be a certain size. And what's happening in a lot of orchestras now is in order to meet payroll and budget, they're actually just cutting the number of musicians, which, you know, it seems like a good idea on paper, but it's eventually deteriorates the sound of the orchestra, and so he's very adamant about keeping the size of it. So we have a full horn, six horn section, and a full four wind section of every wind instrument, a large string section. So it's just a great scene over there. The hall, I don't know if you've been there in Powell Hall. It's an old vaudeville movie theater from the 20s, but extremely resonant, and we own it. So it's a big family over there, and it's great to be back.
Is Todd Bauermaster still in the horn section?
Yes, Todd's third horn. And how do you know Todd?
I went to school with him at Northwestern.
Oh, and we're great friends.
Yeah, I was a horn player there for first couple of years.
Oh, okay. And did you study with Dale Clevenger? Or?
Well, no, that's who I went to study with. But I ended up studying with Norman Schweikert for a year and Richard Oldberg for a year, and then I stopped playing.
Those are both terrific teachers.
So. Yeah, and of course they're both retired from the orchestra quite some time now. Talk about the role a little bit of the principal horn in a major orchestra as opposed to any other horn player.
Well, you know, I suppose you could say that the principal horn kind of sets the overall approach and the overall tone quality of the section. But usually when a principal horn joins an orchestra, they have some kind of tradition, and it's not likely they're going to hire someone too far from that tradition. For example, you think of the Cleveland Sound, which is typically plays large bore silver horns, and they've kept that way for decades and decades, even with the current crop of players, or Los Angeles a little bit that way, and Chicago, of course, the opposite, more smaller bore brass instruments. So, you know, Principal Horn comes in with a certain sound and certain approach, articulation, and just kind of sets the presence of the section and hopefully works with the section to get things sounding unified. But, you know, honestly, I believe the best kind of leadership is kind of hands-off. You basically, everyone's listening and everyone's trying to fit in, and you really don't have to ask too many questions and go over too many things if everyone's tuned into that. And fortunately, that's what we have in St. Louis. It's really a joy.
Do you ever, does an orchestra like that ever have section rehearsals? Or is it always just full rehearsals?
I would say very rarely, like after a rehearsal, we might go over a passage or something. You know, if it's an exceptionally exposed quartet passage or something. I remember a few years ago we were doing the Symphonie Fantastique of Berlioz, and I had this crazy idea that we were going to do the opening of the fourth movement as it the composer specified, which was without valves. So in other words, we were playing hand horn or natural horn technique. And because one of the horns, which would be a B-flat basso horn, a B-flat or extremely low horn, isn't even available to us on our modern instruments, we had to substitute, you know, fake fingerings that would create the same effect. And it was pretty tricky, I must say, because you're playing not only fully closed horn, which means jamming your hand all the way into the bell to change the tone, but also halfway in, and it creates a lot of problems with intonation. So we had to go over that a lot of times, and I think the section wondered what we were doing, but it creates a very eerie effect because some of the notes sound fully open and some of them sound very kind of nasal and closed, and I think that's the effect the composer had in mind. So for something like that, we'll have a sectional, but normally, you know, it's everyone knows their part when they show up at the rehearsal, and we just kind of go for it.
Taking that technique you wanted to use for the Berlioz piece, Symphonie Fantastique, is that something you would have discussed with the conductor, or you just said, let's do it that way, and he's okay with it?
It's funny you mentioned that, because I thought about asking the conductor, but I was afraid he would say no, so I thought, well, let's just try it and see what kind of reaction we get, and we got a positive reaction, so we did it.
Did he know you were doing it?
I think so. It was a French... No, wait a minute. It was a Finnish woman conductor. The trombones and the trumpets that sit directly behind the horns wondered what on earth we were doing, and I had to explain to them that although the piece was written right around the time the valve horn was invented, the composer specifically went out of his way to say, in this particular section, don't use the valves, and then use them again at this section. So he was very clear about what he wanted. It's just that it's a tradition that died out so many years ago that most players in most sections haven't done it that way. So,
orchestras, major symphony orchestras, don't play Baroque music much anymore, it seems.
Now, it's a tragedy, don't you think? It's because it's such a beautiful and integral part of our repertoire.
Well, I was going to ask, since you were talking about the open horn without valves and so on, natural horn, of course Baroque music would have been played that way. They didn't have any valves on those instruments. Are there other kinds of pieces that typically would call for that the orchestra does play now?
Well, you know, the Hungarian composer Gyorgy Ligeti was extremely fond of natural horn, and he wrote in a number of his compositions, we just did one of them recently, I think it was the Violin Concerto, where he will say, okay, play this series of notes in this key, in other words, hold down the valves that will put you in this key, and then play these notes in that key, but don't try to correct the intonation. So certain intervals like the seventh partial would be low, and the 11th partial, they don't fall into the Western scale. They're sort of halfway in between tones, and that's the exact effect he wants. And there's been a few other composers that experimented with it. It gives a real haunting kind of earthy sound, so it's great for contemporary music.
For most of our listeners, can you talk about what you mean by partial?
Oh, sorry. Well, on any given brass instrument or any instrument that has a kind of logarithmic expansion, in other words, it starts out small and gets big, like a conch shell or a certain kinds of animal horns or even a piece of kelp seaweed, if you cut off one end, it expands naturally. It will create a series of tones, which we call the harmonic series, which are basically start out very consonant sounding. You have the tonic or the principal tone, and then you have the fifth of that tone, and then the fourth of that tone, which are those are the building blocks of all music from any culture. Then as it gets higher and higher, the notes get a little bit closer together, and a lot of them sound like they're part of just a normal major scale that we all grew up learning, but some of them are not part of that scale. They're sort of stuck halfway in between the notes, and so those are the natural overtone series, and you could Google it and find all kinds of physics sites devoted to it because it has all kinds of fascinating physics related to it, but that's the short explanation. It's a little like a bugle. If you've ever picked one of those up, you have certain notes you can play, and those are the notes on the instrument, and all the other notes missing you can't play. Now, on the horn, you can sort of get some of those in-between notes by jamming your hand in the bell because that will change the pitch and get some of the in-between notes, and that's how they did it in the old days. But in Mozart or Beethoven's time, they principally wrote thinking about the notes that the horn had. So they wrote mainly those notes, those natural notes that were on the instrument, and then occasionally they would play some notes in between where the player had to use this hand technique to get the rest of those notes out. But so that's the history of our instrument. And the horn players would take out a series of slides, we call them crooks, and they would put those different crooks in to put them in a given key. For example, in Beethoven's Eroica Symphony, you'd take out your E-flat crook, and you'd put it in. Or for the Mozart Jupiter Symphony, you'd take out your C crook. And that's why the pieces were always written in that key. It's a horn in E-flat or horn in C. So that's the tradition we came from. And it was really only until the middle of the 19th century that the horn became kind of a fully chromatic instrument that could play every note in the scale.
When all the valves got added onto that.
Right, exactly.
And that whole business about when you were describing as you go higher in this series, the notes get closer and closer together. That's part of the reason that the horn is so difficult to play, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say so, because if you look at a trumpet or a trombone, they're playing much lower in the harmonic series. So in other words, the notes are further apart, and I liken it to standing on a basketball court, and the higher notes are like maybe like free throw shots, and the lower notes are standing a couple feet in front of the basket. It's really a matter of just aim, and the more you practice, the better your aim is, but invariably it's not perfect. And so the horn grew up with this reputation of being the instrument that misses the most notes. We like to have that in the record books to cut us some slack, but it isn't necessarily true, because once you really methodically master your craft, you can be as accurate as any other instrument. So
I did hear somebody say many years ago that if you were inclined to sit at a major orchestra concert and count the mistakes, first of all, you probably wouldn't be able to count any. But if you did, they would probably come from the horns. And if you heard one, another one would usually follow quickly.
Yeah.
It's a psychological issue.
Yeah, there was a whole generation that kind of grew up, with their arms clenched onto the seat, wondering if the horn player was going to get through the big solo. But I think those days are actually gone. The instruments now are so much better, and we have instruments that are pitched in higher keys, which put us lower in the harmonic series, and that helps, especially with high notes. If you were to play a high Haydn symphony or something, you would probably play it on one of these so-called descant horns, because it definitely helped you to, play with more accuracy up there. So we have options available to us that they didn't have 50 years ago, and I'm extremely grateful that they've come around, believe me.
We're talking with Roger Kaza, who's principal horn player with the St. Louis Symphony. He's going to be giving a recital tonight at Charleston, Eastern Illinois University, at 7:30, and his master class at 4 o'clock. Here's a bit from Beethoven's Eroica Symphony, which he mentioned. It's the trio from the Scherzo movement, which features the horn, and this would have been using originally a natural horn, especially. And enjoy this. It's the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Hans Funk, and it's quite possible that Roger Kaza was playing third horn on this at the time. On the masterclass, she's just invited certain players to play for you, and then what will you do with them typically?
Well, if they're working on a solo or some orchestral repertoire, you know, we'll talk about stylistic issues and technical issues, and just kind of improving their overall presentation. Because you know, essentially, when we get out and play for people, we're telling a story and we're trying to transport people into this little tone world, and there's a lot of just kind of tricks and techniques that can facilitate that, and as well as working with the students on their material, I have some warm-up materials that I brought, and we'll probably go over those because it's always interesting to hear about new warm-ups. With a brass instrument, you're spending a lot of your time just on fundamentals, trying to get your tone pure, trying to get your slurs very effortless sounding, trying to get your pitches lined up, and this is the vernacular. We have a instrument which is basically our lips, and we call it the embouchure setup, but for a lot of brass players, just getting their chops or their embouchure to feel right every morning is the huge accomplishment. So a lot of fundamentals go into that. It's a little bit like singing that way. So you hear singers practicing in their warm-ups to just get everything going very free sounding and making it sound easy so the audience can relax and enjoy the music. So we'll probably do a little bit of that, and then we'll probably do some Q&A about the careers in music and various directions to go, and it's all very informal. We try to have fun doing it.
And what is the point of the warm-up? One of my teachers, Dick Oldberg, used to claim that he just never warmed up, and I seem to have to warm up a lot just to get anything going. You know, what's really happening there when you do a warm-up?
Yeah, there is a lot of individual variation that way. And I personally believe most of the warm-up is mental. In other words, you're essentially teaching yourself all over again at that moment about the fundamentals of playing. You're kind of reminding yourself, okay, here's what it's like to make a relaxed entrance on a note. Here's what it's like to center this note exactly where it's supposed to be. And I have a warm-up, for example, that it goes through a different key every day. So if you were doing a work that day in E-flat, you might do your warm-up in E-flat. Interestingly, I studied with a colleague a very good friend of Dick Oldberg's, Chris Luba, who was the principal horn of Chicago before Dale Clevenger, and he taught me this warm-up. And it's basically, again, trying to just get yourself centered so that you're able to do the things that you're going to be doing when you're playing that day. So the warm-up, from my point of view, really should be tailored to how you're feeling and what you have to play that day. So if you're playing a lot of delicate music, you know, you might warm up a little bit that way. But then at some point in the day, you ought to do something with a little bit more power to it and, you know, test your strength, because if you're only playing that way for the whole week, you're going to get deficient. Likewise, if you're playing a lot of really aggressive music, you know, playing a Tchaikovsky symphony where you're playing loud all the time, you might have to, in your warm-up, really emphasize the delicate side of your playing, or that might go away. So I believe the best warm-ups are the ones that are not scripted or, you know, are not chiseled in stone, and that you're able to adapt them every day to what you're doing. And if you have a wide variety of things you can call on. And some days you are warmed up in 5 minutes. It just feels good. Other days, wow, everything feels very stiff, and you better take a little bit more time trying to loosen things up. So it's an ongoing dynamic process.
And a lot of that, I imagine, can have to do with the weather. It can have to do with your state of mind. It can
have
to do with how much sleep you got, how much you played the day before.
Yep, that's right.
Before we let you go and head to get yourself to Charleston, and with apologies, I've actually run out of time to finish out the rest of that interview, which I actually had with Roger Kaza, principal horn of the St. Louis Symphony, just this morning. He was driving to Charleston. He's probably there by now, and you can go observe his masterclass at 4 o'clock. It's at the Dowden Fine Arts Center. Check in at the lobby there, and they'll let you know which room. And then he's giving a recital tonight at 7:30 in the recital hall at the Dowden. And one of the pieces that's on the program, the last piece on the program, well, let me say there's music of Ernest Bloch, Carl Czerny, and Karlheinz Stockhausen, a really interesting program. But the last piece, he's going to be joined by Catherine McBain, who's the horn professor at Eastern, in a concerto for two horns by Antonio Rossetti, one of his concertos in E-flat. I'm not sure which one they're playing, but here is the final movement of one of his E-flat concertos for two horns. Here are Klaus Wallendorf and Sarah Willis with the Bavarian Chamber Philharmonic on Live and Local.